I'm Diana Mason, the host of Health Cetera in the Catskills. And I've been covering the issue of the separation of immigrant children from their parents at our borders and their detention in warehouse conditions for quite some time now. And I cover it because I know that most of these children will now be at high risk for what's called toxic stress in childhood. And this can harm them emotionally and physically, and not just immediately short term, but as adults. I mean, we have research showing that as adults, they're at higher risk for physical as well as emotional health problems. But toxic stress in childhood is not confined to these children. It can and is happening every day in our own communities. And here to talk with us about that and about toxic stress in childhood and what's called ACEs, adverse childhood events, is Elizabeth Marigliano, a psychiatric nurse practitioner and adjunct clinical faculty at the SUNY Delhi School of Nursing. Libby, thanks so much for joining me today. Oh, I have to pull your microphone up there. Okay. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for having me on here today.
Well, it's great to have you here, and you're doing such important work. We've talked on this program before about the mental health program that the hospital has in the schools in the region that's really trying to address some of this stress and get some mental health services out to children and families. But this is such an important topic, and it's really become on the radar screen across the country of schools, of healthcare providers, and others. So I think it's really important for our community to understand it because it's in our midst. So let's talk about what is toxic stress in childhood and then what are ACEs?
Well, ACEs are adverse childhood experiences. That's what it stands for, and they're stressful or traumatic experiences that children are exposed to in their home or community environment. And toxic stress is a prolonged activation of the stress response. In the absence of protective relationships or buffering stable relationships, could be in the home or in the community setting. And Dr. Lorraine Burns, she kind of addressed the stress response, how it, when the stress response is activated, a cascade of hormones get activated in the system, cortisol and adrenaline. And initially, those hormones can be life-saving in the response to, you know, something stressful. But when it's prolonged and those hormones are constantly activated in a person's system, it actually becomes damaging to their health.
One of the things that when I first read this research, one of the things that really stood out to me is that it's actually, because of these hormonal changes, it's actually changing the architecture of the child's brain. That was stunning to me.
Yeah, so what's happening is because the stress response is always activated, then they're, you know, the architecture of the brain goes offline, not the architecture of the brain, sorry, their prefrontal cortex goes offline. So when somebody's exposed to a stressful experience, they're in their brain region, the amygdala, which is the fear center, and that kind of lights up when there's a stress response. And the prefrontal cortex, which is sort of the air traffic controller of the brain, goes offline. And that usually keeps the amygdala in check. But if the stress response is prolonged, then that individual is not really thinking. They're not there. They're offline. They've lost control. So it affects that child's ability to learn. So those neurons aren't developing, and that architecture, that scaffolding, is not being built properly. So they're losing that capacity to learn and develop in their brain to grow.
So I would suspect then that a teacher would see that there are some behavioral problems, attention problems, with attention, with following through on directions in the child who may have these stressors going on. Is that right?
Absolutely.
So think about that with what we've got going on in the schools in our region and the program that Margaretville Hospital has with having a social worker in the school to see children with behavioral issues and intervene with them. So and their families. So it just underscores, I think, how important that program is. I had to just throw that in because I think it's an amazing program and it really gets at the heart of that. But we'll talk about some other potential ways to intervene on this in a minute. So the implications of toxic stress in childhood and ACEs. So you have a child who's not going to be able to function well in school. That means they're not going to achieve, they could be a school dropout, right? So their whole Absolutely. Achievement, right?
Yes.
Which feeds into their own self-esteem.
So that child might be presenting in the classroom, and you know, there's different types of behaviors as well. I'd like to point out there's externalized behaviors where the child's acting out, disruptive, not able to sit still. But then you also have children who have some internalized behaviors, and actually those kids may go unnoticed because they may be more of the anxious type. They may stay quiet. They might have poor eye contact. They might not be fearful to engage adults. But they still might not be ready to learn when they're there. So they might struggle and not be able to do the work because they're in that constant state of they have their prolonged stress response in toxic stress. So these children that have these experiences at home and in their community, they're just coming to school not ready to learn. They're not learning those skills at home to dysregulate themselves and to calm themselves down because their caregiver might not know how to do that for themselves. So they're not passing this on to their child. So they're coming to school just, you know, dysregulated, not able to calm themselves. And that's what their focus is. They're not ready to calmly accept information. And they're the other thing that goes offline during a prolonged stress response is the hippocampus, which involves memory. So they'll have a difficult time remembering things. So many things occur with this prolonged stress response.
Wow.
That affects that child's ability to learn and take in new information.
So the original research linked toxic stress in childhood with adult chronic illnesses and shortened lifespan. What's the connection there?
Okay.
Is it all situational?
Well, that I think you're referring to the original ACE study, which was, is that the one you're referring to?
I'm not sure which one I'm referring to be honest with you.
So how this all started, actually the original ACE study was published in 1998, and the study population actually took place in San Diego through Kaiser Permanente. So the population was largely Caucasian, 74% Caucasian, and they looked at the whole population of the healthcare users in that system who all had jobs, they were working, and they were able to buy into this healthcare system. They looked at all those healthcare users, and they sent out a survey, an optional survey, and they were able to receive back 17,000 of the
wow.
healthcare users to respond to the survey about how much exposure to childhood adversity that they had, because there is an ACE tool that I can talk about in a mm-hmm. moment. In any event, it turns out that that 64% of that population, about two-thirds, had at least one exposure to childhood adversity, and they were able to link the participants' exposure to adversity and their healthcare issues later in life because they had access to all of that information. So if somebody had four or more ACEs, they were that much more, it was a dose response, they were that much more likely to have cardiovascular disease, to have ever injected drugs, to have ever attempted suicide. And actually with injection of drugs, it was a 10% increase, 10 times more likely.
10 times.
I apologize. Yeah. 10 times more likely to have injected drugs, and they were 12 times more likely to have tried to attempt suicide.
Wow. And I think there was a higher rate of diabetes and some other.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can tell you those statistics. But yes, there was an increased likelihood of cardiovascular disease, hypertension, diabetes, early death.
Yeah.
There's a higher risk for early death in this population. So the findings have been, you know, pretty astounding. And the top 10 risk factors of early, our top 10 risk factors of smoking, severe obesity, physical inactivity, depression, suicide attempt, alcoholism, illicit drug use, injected drug use, and multiple sexual partners and STDs. All, they were able to capture all that information in that population.
So when you think about all those health problems as adults, and we focus so much attention on the cost of healthcare right now, and think about somebody with all of those problems and how much the healthcare would cost, it's another wonderful example of how if we would just move upstream and look at how do we prevent this from occurring. And in our communities, I think it's really possible to look at how do we surround families and children with a supportive community. So I think if you could share with listeners some of the questions that are asked on this ACEs checklist. Some of them are, I think, quite interesting. And when you hear these, I think it's always helpful to think about a child who you have concerns about and who you know could be your neighbor, it could be, if you're a teacher, a child in your classroom, your grandparent, maybe a grandchild. So I think it's helpful for us to think about which children do we know who may be exposed to these kinds of adverse childhood events.
Sure. And one thing I just want to preface is I'll talk about the original ACE questionnaire, but there since that original study, there have been other expanded questionnaires developed that actually capture poverty, community violence, and the other factors that this original one does not capture. But the original ACE study survey looked at emotional, physical, or sexual abuse in the home that was somebody experienced while they were growing up before the age of 18 years old.
So I think it was the first question.
Yep. So
it was fascinating.
Yes. Did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often swear at you, insult you, put you down, or humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might be physically hurt? And you respond either yes or no. And a yes is 1 point.
Yeah.
And I can read
a couple more. There's one about slapping. And
did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often push, grab, slap, or throw something at you, or ever hit you so hard that you had marks or were injured? And again, if yes, that's a point. Did an adult person at least 5 years older than you ever touch or fondle you, or have you touch their body in a sexual way? Or attempt or actually have oral, anal, or vaginal intercourse with you? Again, yes is 1 point. Did you often or very often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special? Or your family didn't look at you, look out for each other, feel close to each other, or support each other? Yeah. Again, yes is a point. And then it also asks about domestic violence, parental discord, mm-hmm. mental illness, substance abuse, alcohol or illicit drugs, mm-hmm. and crime, a household member who was sent to prison or incarcerated.
And as you said before you read those, that was the original ACE, and there are now questionnaires that have been based on a broader spectrum of the population and really account for the stressors that occur when somebody is very poor and maybe is homeless, and the stress that imposes on a child when there is no secure housing or no food security, et cetera. So I think those are all important things to also consider in this.
Absolutely.
So you get exposed to these stressors, and does every child get this toxic stress?
No. And, you know, I think that brings in resilience, and there's a lot more I think we need to know about resilience. I mean, there's definitely literature out there, but there's more that we should be looking, or hopefully we'll figure out. But in any event, what they found in the literature, a way to buffer the stress response is protective relationships, stable home environment, stability in the school. So those protective relationships are critical. Mm. I think that's something that we can look at to do in our own communities is trying to wrap some of these families with support and healthy relationships and in the school setting as well.
Yeah, which underscores again the program that Margaretville Hospital has in the school and how important that is, but it raises other issues about how else can we support families in our community, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So what's being found to be effective in reducing the stressors or let's say reducing the stressors yes. that families experience?
And what they found is really needing to take more of a community approach to this, as I just mentioned, and working with these families. So trying to help these women, you know, and fathers and mothers before they even have children,
yes.
kind of work with them early to help them regulate themselves and learn how to manage their own stress. We're not going to eliminate every childhood adversity, but we can build resilience in people and build stronger communities. So some things we could do is in the schools. I know many of the schools in our region are teaching some mental, emotional, behavioral curriculums. So some of that is starting to happen.
Like what?
Yoga, mindful awareness programs.
Meditation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Meditation, yoga. And also working with the community domestic violence shelters, uh-huh. working with the early childhood development programs, Head Start is another recommendation to help with these communities.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is more that we can do. And I know, for example, the yoga and the meditation programs in schools is going on across the country. And the research on that is quite remarkable. The effects that they're having are incredible. There was actually, I want to say the PBS NewsHour had a segment on this. And this young person talking about, you know, when something crazy is going on at home, I just go into my whatever pose it is on the yoga or go into my meditation and I feel much calmer and it's okay. So that's maybe even parents could be helped with some of that, right?
Yes. And I think that's what we need to look at, more parental support.
Yes.
And looking at providing that in the community. Another thing, high quality childcare for these children, because
yes.
parents are working. They're not with that child all day. So making sure those the childcare organizations are providing some of the mental, emotional, and behavioral curriculum in their little programs. They're teaching these kids to meditate, take their time, and making sure that the workforce is able to regulate themselves so they can impart that skill onto these children.
So there's been a lot of work recently that's going on around looking at transportation options in our region. That's really a factor here, isn't it?
Absolutely.
How do you see it?
How do I see it?
You see families all the time who are affected by not having transportation options.
Yes.
To seek services and help.
It can be very difficult, especially if it's not, you know, a critical service, something like going to a yoga class. They might not get transportation, you know, to get there through their transportation cab. So yeah, it's difficult. How do we get people there? How in our community, in a rural community, it can be a real barrier to helping them.
So you're a psychiatric nurse practitioner and you see children, I'm assuming, who do have toxic stress, who have experienced ACEs, adverse childhood events. How hopeful are you that that interventions on a mental health level through counseling, through behavioral therapy or what have you, can prevent the toxic stress in childhood from having a detrimental effect?
I'm hopeful because there's such a momentum lately with this topic, and schools are starting to look at this and how they can change their educational delivery systems. It's called trauma-informed. So there's trauma-informed care in the healthcare sector, and then there's trauma-informed educational practices in the school sector. So I am hopeful because there's been more momentum recently in this area. But it is a matter of, it takes a village. I think it's not just one sector that's going to fix this. It's really a more community public health approach that everyone gets on board, and in their own sectors, we all work together for the same goal, is to help build these skills.
So what is trauma-informed education or trauma-informed care?
Trauma-informed education is recognizing that so whether it's in the school system or in healthcare, it's recognizing that that individual potentially had experienced a lot of trauma in their life. So we might be seeing some of those externalized behaviors, whether they're, you know, in the healthcare sector or school, they might be acting out, acting aggressively, and, you know, behaving in a way where you might feel threatened, but recognize, you know what, that person's coming from a place where maybe they just need some help. So recognizing that they may have experienced trauma, and asking, instead of what's wrong with you, what happened? How can I help you? How can I help you feel better? And just being kind and compassionate and understanding that individual's perspective. That's essentially what trauma-informed care is all about. And gaining that trust, building relationships, providing that opportunity for that person. Because I think our immediate response sometimes is to lash back out, but that's sometimes it makes things worse and can trigger that individual more, and we might get more externalized behaviors.
So let's go back to, I'm living in this community and next to me is a family that's quite stressed. I can see the stress. And the children are sort of off the wall at times, and I have real concerns about the struggles that this family has and challenges that they face and the potential impact on the parents as well as on the children. Mm-hmm. What do I do with that?
You can offer, how can I help you? What can I do to help you? And then maybe see what services you can connect them with out in the community. But really just caring and how can I help you? Being there, and instead of maybe getting frustrated or judging, but being there, offering that support and recognizing their perspective.
So if, when you say connecting them to services in the community, what kind of services are you thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking depending on what the need, what you're seeing there, but taking them to the county, some of the different counties have different services, seeing if you can get them in touch with people there that can work with them.
And mental health services, social services,
food whatever pantry. Their need. Yeah, whatever their needs are. Each community does have a food pantry. So even just offering and making sure they're aware of those resources out there. Yeah. I think as a neighbor, seeing some of this, there's only so much you can do is just offer support and then see how you can push them in the right direction to get some help and support for their family.
So as nurses, you and I know what it means to say offer support. For the general person here who's not a healthcare provider, maybe doesn't have that social support background in their skill set, what does that look like? To offer support?
Just offering, hey, can I give you a ride somewhere? Or can I look, I can go into town and see if I can get someone to come out and help you? And looking out and seeing what you can do. And then just go to your public health department possibly and see if there's anything you can do, or social services. And you can ask as a community member, I see, what can I give to these individuals to help them? And I'm not sure in particular what resources are in this community, but a lot of communities will have a community resource pamphlet or community resource book, and they can get connected with someone who can see what kind of services they can get and be.
I'm thinking it's also as simple as saying to perhaps the mother someday, why don't you come over and have a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
And then what you described earlier about tell me what's up, tell me how you're doing, tell me not what's wrong, but tell me how you are.
Yes.
But I'm thinking the same thing with the child, because I do believe it takes a village to help children move into adulthood. And the idea of befriending a child, if you're that next door neighbor, why don't you come in, have a popsicle, and let's just talk, and asking that child how they're doing. Having that kind of neighborly friend could be really impactful, couldn't it?
I agree, yes. And that's what it's about, having supportive relationships throughout the community. So
yeah.
If we can provide that for one another and show that compassion.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's probably a longer term goal, but it is a goal of the Catskill Addiction Coalition that I'm a part of and that we've talked a lot about on this program. But the idea of really primary prevention, moving upstream, and how do we realized if you want to prevent addiction from occurring in the first place, we've got to really take a look at the families in our region and how to help them, how to support them, how to help them be better parents, find out what kind of supports and care they need, and to also look at what's happening with the children. So I think, and I know that you're doing a doctoral dissertation on this topic,
yeah.
And it's really important. And I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking to our listeners about toxic stress and ACEs in childhood.
Thank you so much for providing this opportunity.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I've been talking with Elizabeth Marigliano, a psychiatric nurse practitioner and adjunct clinical faculty at the SUNY Delhi School of Nursing. And we're going to keep talking about these kinds of things here on Health Center in the Catskills. It is about health. It is about prevention, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It really is. So it's deeply important, I think, that we think about these things. You're listening to WIOX Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. I'm Diana Mason, the host of Health Center in the Catskills.
Thank you.